ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रश्नाय भूतले श्रीमाते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नित्य नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रसादने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेश तरने श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, Verse 34. Asa vihane ka guno guno tvaraha.
Asa vihane ka guno guno tvaraha.
Pratag vida dravya guna kriyokti vihi. Sampajater tasaya linga namabhir. Visuddha vijnana gana sarupataha. Asa vihane ka guno guno dvaraha. Pratag vida dravya guna kriyokti bhi. Sampadya ter tasaya linga nama pir.
Sampadya ter tasaya.
Visuddha vijnana gana sarupataha. Asau, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Iha, in this material world, Aneka, various guna, qualities, aguna, transcendental, Advara, Yagya, Pratakvida, varieties, Dravya, physical elements, Guna, ingredients, Kriya,
performances,
Uktivi, by chanting different mantras, Sampadyate, is worshipped. Artha, interest. Asaya, purpose. Linga, form. Namabhi,
name.
Vishuddha,
without contamination.
Vijnana,
science.
Gana,
concentrated.
Sarupata, in his own form. Translation: the Supreme Personality of God, it is transcendental and not contaminated by this material world. Although he is concentrated spirit soul without material variety, for the benefit of the conditioned soul, he nevertheless accepts different types of sacrifice performed with various material elements, rituals, and mantras, and offered to the demigods under different names according to the interests and purposes of the performers. Purport: for material prosperity, there are recommendations in the Vedas for various types of yajna. In Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that Lord Brahma created all living entities, including human beings and demigods, and advised them to perform yajna according to their material desires. These performances are called yajnas because their ultimate goal is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The purpose of performing yagyas is to get material benefit because the aim is to simultaneously satisfy the Supreme Lord. Such yagyas have been recommended in the Vedas. Such performances are, of course, known as karma, kanda, or material activities. And all material activities are certainly contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Generally, the karmakanda ritualistic ceremonies are performed in the mode of passion. Yet the conditioned souls, both humans and demigods, are obliged to perform these yajñas because without them, one cannot be happy at all. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that these karmakanda ritualistic ceremonies, although contaminated, contain touches of devotional service, because whenever there is a performance of any yajna, Lord Vishnu is given a central position. This is very important, because even a little endeavor to please Lord Vishnu is bhakti and is of great value. A tinge of bhakti purifies the material nature of the performances, which by the devotional service gradually come to the transcendental position. And therefore, although such yajnas are superficially material activities, the results are transcendental. Such yajnas as Surya Yajna, Indra Yajna, and Chandra Yajna are performed in the names of demigods. But these demigods are bodily parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods cannot accept sacrificial offerings for themselves, but they can accept them for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as a departmental tax collector of a government cannot collect taxes for his personal account, but can realize them for the government. Any yajna performed with this complete knowledge and understanding is described in Bhagavad Gita as a brahmarpanam, or a sacrifice offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since no one but the Supreme Lord can enjoy the results of sacrifice, the Lord says that He is the actual enjoyer of all sacrifices. Sacrifices should be performed with this view in mind. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, brahmarpanam brahmahavir, brahmagno brahmana hutam, brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahmakarma samadina. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consumption is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. The performer of sacrifices must always keep in view that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas are meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu arajate panta. Anything material or spiritual done for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord is understood to be actual yajna. And by performing such yajnas, one gets liberation from material bondage. The direct method of getting liberation from material bondage is devotional service, comprising the nine following methods: Sravanam, Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Padasevanam, Archanam Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyam Atmanivedanam. This ninefold process is described in this verse as Visuddha Vijnana Guna, or satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly by transcendental knowledge concentrated on the form of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This is the best method for satisfying the Supreme Lord. One cannot take to this direct process, however. One who cannot take to this direct process, however, should take the indirect process of performing yajnas for the satisfaction of Vishnu or yajna. Vishnu is therefore called Yajnapati, Sriyam Patim, Yajnapatim, Jagatpatim. The Supreme Personality of Godhead's deep scientific knowledge is concentrated to the supreme point. For example, medical science knows some things superficially, but doctors do not know exactly how things happen in the body. Lord Krishna, however, knows everything in detail. Therefore, his knowledge is Vijnana Gana, because it does not have any of the defects of material science. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Visuddha Vijnana Gana, concentrated transcendental knowledge. Therefore, even though he accepts karma kandiya material yajnas, he always remains in a transcendental position. Therefore, the mention of aneka guna refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead's many transcendental qualities, for he's not affected by material qualities. The different kinds of material paraphernalia, or physical elements, are also gradually transformed into spiritual understanding, because ultimately there's no difference between material and spiritual qualities, for everything emanates from the Supreme Spirit. This is realized by a gradual process of realization and purification. One vivid example of this is Dhruva Maharaj, who took to meditation in the forest to achieve material benefit but ultimately became spiritually advanced and did not want any benediction for material profit. He was simply satisfied with the association of the Supreme Lord. Asaya means determination. Generally, a conditioned soul has a determination for material profit, but when these desires for material profit are satisfied through performance of yajna, one gradually achieves the spiritual platform, then his life becomes perfect. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore recommends kama sarvakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Everyone, whether akama, a devotee, sarvakama, a karmi, or moksha kama, a jnani or yogi, is encouraged to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the direct method of devotional service. This way, one can get both material and spiritual profit simultaneously. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and not contaminated by this material world. Although he is concentrated spirit soul without material variety, for the benefit of the conditioned soul, he nevertheless accepts different types of sacrifice performed with various material elements, rituals, and mantras, and offered to the demigods under different names, according to the interests and purposes of the performers. So, this verse by Maharaj Prithu, who's actually a Shaktivesh avatar of the Supreme Lord, explains the relationship of karma kanda to spiritual life. Generally, of course, we tend to criticize karma kanda as being inferior. And of course, even in our 10 aparats to the holy name, we say that the name should not be equated with karma kanda, because karma kanda is material and the holy name is spiritual. So, and in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna refers to the Vedas as being full of flowery words, etc. Stuck in the three modes of material nature. So this refers to the largely to the karma kanda section of the Vedas. So there are actually different sections of the Vedas. There is the karma kanda section. The kanda means a section, actually. So each Veda has four parts to it. So the Rig Veda, for instance, has a Karma Kanda section. It also has a Gyan Kanda section. It also has an Upasana Kanda section. And the Karma Kanda section actually has two parts to that also. That is Brahmanas and Aranyakas. These are two different types of literary compositions which are attached to the Rig Veda or the Sam Veda, etc. Different Vedas will have different, you know, Aranyakas and Brahmanas attached to them. So these two things are part of the Karma Kanda. That is, they deal with using Vedic mantras to perform sacrifices and get material gain. So there's these two sections of the Veda, Brahmanas and Aranyakas, deal with material gains by using Vedic mantra. But then we also have the Jnana Kanda. These are the Upanishads. And these Upanishads largely reject Karma Kanda or material goals and strive for either Brahman, impersonal realization, or Bhagavan. So within Jnana Kanda we have
we can say, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Huh? So, for instance, we have some Upanishads, which are interpreted largely as impersonal, with Brahman, like the Chandogya Upanishad or Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. But even there, our acharyas say that ultimately, no, it is also personal. But in spite of that, we have other Upanishads like Mahanarayana Upanishad, which is directly worship of Vishnu, or the Krishna Upanishad, or Gopaltapani Upanishad, all about Krishna. So we have some Upanishads which are bhakti, and some which are jnana. And then we have another kanda, Upasana Kanda. These are the mantras, what normally we think of as the Vedas, that all the different verses like the Purusha Shukta, etc. So this is called the Upasana Kanda, the various verses or the Samhita section, which involve were verses praising Vishnu and different devatas. Of course, even Madhvacharya will say that, he explains, and Vedanta Sutra of all the Vajibhusana explains that though you may think that these mantras are for various devatas and for Vishnu also, actually they're all for Vishnu. Because all the devatas' names, such as Shiva and Indra and Agni, are actually names of Vishnu. So ultimately, all the mantras are, first of all, glorifying Vishnu, and secondarily, they may be glorifying some devata. So, in any case, we have this Karmakanda section dedicated largely to going to Svarga Loka or higher planetary systems and getting enjoyment. So that's material. And therefore, the devotees often condemn this. However, and even Krishna criticizes it to some degree in Bhagavad Gita, however, actually, Vishnu Chakravarti, for instance, he says you should not condemn this. And he takes the third aparad to the holy name. Shruti Shastra Ninda is aparad. To criticize the Vedas. Because he takes Shruti literally as meaning the Vedas. Huh? So you should not criticize the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Because it is also absolute. It's part of the Supreme Lord. And that's what's explained in this verse. Vishnu is also in this Karmakanda. In all of these different mantras and worship of different devatas, ultimately, it is directed towards the Supreme Lord, though it is indirect. And it is still ultimately directed towards the Supreme Lord. And of course, it's also non-different from the Supreme Lord, because the Vedas are spiritual sound, non-different from the Supreme Lord. But it looks a little deceptive, because how can this be spiritual? Because there's directions for telling people to go to Svargaloka, etc. So, this Karmakanda section, and in Bhagavad Gita, the Karma Yoga section, are methods for people who cannot take to Bhakti Yoga immediately. So at least let them get some rules and regulations and elevate themselves to the gunas. And by doing so, if they get to a sattva gun, then they can begin to appreciate spiritual goals like liberation or Bhagavan. So, therefore, the Karmakanda section and Karma Yoga are preliminary steps to lead a person to spiritual life. In that sense, we can say it's approved by the Supreme Lord. If these are taken as independent methods with no other goal than to enjoy the material world, then they are condemned. But if they're methods to help raise a person, then fine. Agreeable. But generally we think of Varnashram also as Artha Dharma Kama. The Dharma rules, the rules of what to do and what not to do in order to get Artha, survive in the material world, get enough food, and Kama, to get more material enjoyment like Svargaloka. However, again, that Varnashram system ultimately leads to moksha. If you get to sattva gun, then you're encouraged to do Jnana Yoga and get moksha at least. So the system of Karmakanda and Karma Yoga, etc., are approved in the sense that they are introductory methods to get to the spiritual level. Once we get to the spiritual level, then we have to start practicing another process and not simply stick to Karmakanda. If we do that, then we are successful. If we don't, and we simply do the Karmakanda and join the material world, then it's a failure. So that is what is condemned by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And that is why we sometimes say the Vedas are involved in the three gunas and temporary goals, etc. So one portion of the Vedas is criticized. That is the Karmakanda for this reason. But at the same time, if we see it in its proper perspective, that it's only one step towards the goal, then we see that it's also an intelligent strategy of the Supreme Lord to purify people, but it's indirect. Similarly, Veda Vyas wrote Puranas, and some of the Puranas are for Tamugun people, and they are advised to worship Shiva. Shiva is Bhagavan. He's glorified as the highest personality, the Supreme Lord, etc. Or in the Rajasic Puranas, Brahma is glorified as the Supreme. Vedavyas also in the Puranas, the six Puranas is glorifying Shiva, and six Puranas glorifying Brahma. Why? To get people in the lower modes to gradually advance by worshipping different devatas, and eventually they come to Satguna and worship Vishnu. Indirect method again. So it's there in the Vedas, and therefore we accept it. However, if we look in the Bhagavatam in the first canto, we see there that Narada Muni came to Veda Vyasa and he said, this is all nonsense. Because in Kali Yuga, people will worship Shiva, but then they won't advance beyond that. They'll get stuck there. They're not very intelligent. People are not intelligent and short-lived and very lazy. So once they start worshipping Shiva, they will never give Shiva up. They'll simply worship, 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 and they're too lazy to go anywhere else, and they're too less intelligent to understand it's only a step to get to a higher level. And they have a short lifespan, so therefore they're not going to progress very far. So this is not very practical for Kali Yuga. So therefore, Narada Muni advised Veda Vyas, you give up this gradual approach of, you know, purifying people through the gunas and coming to Satvagod, and you simply tell everybody to worship Krishna. Because he's the most attractive form of the Lord, most suitable for the fallen people of Kali Yuga. And similarly, we see in Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say at the end after describing Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Stanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga? Just forget everything. Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Give up all these processes and simply surrender unto me. Surrender unto Krishna. So again, he's emphasizing the process of bhakti is what we should follow. So this looks a little contradictory, because the whole idea of Karmakanda is for people who are not qualified for bhakti. And we know that not everybody's qualified for bhakti. What is the qualification? Faith. You have to have faith in the Supreme Lord, faith in the bhakti scriptures. And if you don't, what do you have to do? Then you do Karma Yoga. So in Kali Yuga, how many people have faith in Krishna? Not very many. So how we say Sarva Dharma Parityaja, just worship Krishna, if they don't have faith, then how they can do so? We can't force them. So how is it possible to do that? So another strategy is there. That's called the Yuga Dharma. So through the Yuga Dharma, we have access to all the different types of people and all the gunas, etc. And we see here, Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavatam, that if you are a karma yogi, you have sarva kama, or you have moksha kama, desire for liberation, still, you should worship the Supreme Lord. So even if you're not directly qualified to worship the Supreme Lord, here in the Bhagavatam, it's also, anyway, worship the Supreme Lord somehow or other. So, if you have attraction to material goals, then you're encouraged to worship the Supreme Lord. Now, this is not the best type of bhakti. And this is what we call mixed bhakti, karma mixed bhakti. or if you have a desire for liberation, which is rare in Kali Yuga, then it would be Gyan Misra Bhakti. Yeah? Bhakti with a desire to get liberation, destroy your karmas. So, people are somehow encouraged to worship the Supreme Lord in Kali Yuga, even if they have material desires, or they have desire for liberation. And they should worship the Lord anyway. Huh? Still, they need some sort of faith to do the process of bhakti, even if they have material desires. So, the process for doing that is also the Yuga Dharma, Nam Sankirtan. However, we have another offense of the holy name. What is that one? Don't preach to the faithless persons. Don't preach the holy name. Don't tell them to chant Hare Krishna. You can't say that to the faithless person. Otherwise, it's offense. So then how is it possible to spread Yuga Dharma in Kali Yuga? Huh? So the answer to that is that if you don't teach and give them instructions, but they can hear the holy name. And by constant hearing the holy name, then they get faith. Once they get the faith, then you can give them nice instructions. Give them scripture, Bhagavad Gita, etc. Huh? So therefore, for the general population, the main method is let them just hear the name of the Lord somehow or other. Huh? So that we do through Nam Sankirtan. They hear the name of the Lord, and by exposure and exposure and exposure, they become a little purified, and they develop some agata sukriti, and then they develop faith. The atma becomes more favorable. But it may take a long time. Huh? So this requires patience on the part of the devotee. They cannot expect immediately everybody surrenders to Krishna. Just let them hear and hear and hear and hear and hear, and eventually some of those people develop. Maybe next lifetime, other people will develop. Huh? So at least we have to plant the seeds of bhakti everywhere and let them hear the holy name. Of course, besides the holy name, we have other processes also, such as prasadam. So we give people prasadam, and if they eat it, and they don't know what it is, but they like food, so they eat it, then it's good for them. And if they take enough prasadam, then eventually they also get shraddha, faith. We feed them enough prasadam, then eventually they start developing interest in Krishna. We don't have to say anything at all. Otherwise, that's offense. You can't tell them about Krishna or anything because they have no faith. Give them prasadam. Huh? Or, of course, we have festivals like Rath Yatra. They see the form of the Lord, fine. They don't know what it is. But that form of the Lord actually does something to the Atma, very subtly. They don't know what it is either. But simply seeing the form of the Lord also will affect them. Huh? So eventually, by exposure, the Atma or the Jiva develops this Shraddha or faith, favorability towards the Supreme Lord. And then, at that stage, it becomes conscious, and they seek out this some more information, and then we can preach to them directly. So rather than follow indirect processes of encouraging people to do Karmakanda and Jnanakanda and Yoga, etc., which is the traditional system in other yugas, because there is a Varnashram system intact and there's a king, Manu, a descendant of Manu is there to lead the people. Kali Yuga is all destroyed. And even the descendant of Manu is not available. He's up in the Himalayas someplace. He won't come out until the next Satyuga and start the line again. Huh? Because they have to continue the line. And this is now a 28th cycle. There's 71 Yuga cycles, and this is 28th cycle. So the line of Vaivasvata Manu has to continue after Arkali Yuga again starts up and continues for the rest of the 71 Yuga cycles. So it will continue. But now, somehow or other, the descendant is a little frustrated. And he's not visible. He's up in the Himalayas someplace. And only when Satyuga comes, then he'll manifest himself and establish, you know, the line of kings again with the Varnashram system, etc. So now we're in a rather hopeless position. But then what is the hope in Kali Yuga? Nam Sankirtan. This is the end of the Bhagavatam. Huh? One great quality in Kali Yuga, chanting the name of the Lord, name of Krishna. So, therefore, we can follow direct process in our Kali Yuga. That is, without the other Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and Astanga Yoga, we just get everybody to do Bhakti Yoga by spreading the holy name everywhere, And then gradually people develop faith, and then they take to the process of bhakti. So that's the process we follow in our particular Kali Yuga. Whereas other ages, generally, they go through this whole process of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sangha Yoga, and then Bhakti Yoga. So, one can go directly, or one can go the indirect process, but Krishna and Bhagavad Gita says, actually, it is better to do the direct process, if you can, because it's quicker. To go through the Karmakanda process and get to Jnana, I said, it will take you many lifetimes to get from Tamogun to Sattvagun. It could take many lifetimes to do that. On the other hand, it is said here in Bhagavatam that if you chant the holy name of the Lord once purely, and you are a dog eater, then suddenly you're no longer a dog eater. You're beyond the gunas, and you're qualified to do whatever a Brahmin can do. So you get instant elevation through the process of chanting the holy name of the Lord even. So a much quicker process of elevation than going for many lifetimes as a sudra and then advancing to become a vaishya, then a kshatriya, then a brahmana. Instantly it is done simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord once purely. So it's a more effective process for us when we have short lifespans and little attention, etc. So, this particular verse is describing how the karma kanda section, though it appears to be material, actually it emanates from Vishnu as part of the Vedas, so therefore it must be spiritual. At the same time, there's worship of devatas, etc., and we use material things to sacrifice, etc. So it may look material, but as Prabhupada explains in the purport, there must always be worship of Vishnu there in all the sacrifices. In the ultimate goal, again, is Vishnu, even though the people who do the sacrifices may not really understand that. The goal is ultimately Vishnu. And therefore, these activities become spiritualized. However, not to the same extent that we have the spiritualization in bhakti. Because bhakti is directly offering to the Supreme Lord. This is all more or less indirect. So when we directly offer to the Supreme Lord, we use our body, we use our senses, we use our mind, which are material again, but we get a very spiritual effect directly. That is, the Atma develops bhakti. And bhakti is spiritual also. It's the Sarup Shakti of Krishna, the internal energy of Krishna. So the effect is spiritual, even though we use material senses. How is that possible? How can material things give spiritual results? So we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you can offer me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, which is material, using your material hands. But then he also says another thing has to be there. What is it? Bhakti. You have to have bhakti. So the bhakti shakti is what makes it all spiritual. So if you have no devotion and you offer, you get a material result. If you have devotion and you offer to Krishna, you get a spiritual result. So though we use material senses, if you have that bhakti, which emanates from the jiva, or the atma actually, it's part of the jiva, it takes shelter of the jiva, which, and it's, as I said, Sarup Shakti of the Lord, then you get a spiritual result. So it doesn't matter whether you have spiritual or material senses, if you have the bhakti, then you get a spiritual result. But when we offer, then the senses and the mind do not give karma, no material results. So what happens? And we get spiritual results. That means the senses have become spiritualized. They look like material senses, but they're giving a different result completely. That means spiritualized senses. What is the difference between a spiritualized sense and a spiritual sense? Not much difference, except that a spiritualized sense and a spiritual sense. A spiritualized sense is a material sense which we use and we get spiritual result. Ultimately, belongs to the material body, and then when you die, these senses have to perish or whatever. The spiritual sense in the spiritual world never dies. That's the difference. So, by practicing with our material senses, bhakti, which in the process they become spiritualized, what happens is atma develops spiritual senses. So that when you get to bhava and prema, you can perceive the Lord, you can hear the Lord. How do you do that? With your spiritual eyes, spiritual ears. You can serve the Lord with your spiritual hands. So through the process of bhakti, the atma develops a spiritual form and a spiritual senses, etc., and a spiritual mind. And then we can directly relate with the Lord spiritually. And then we can give up the material body completely. And we just have spiritual senses, which are eternal. Therefore, we utilize, even in bhakti, material things. We offer material things to the Lord, like flowers and fruit, etc. But we get completely spiritual results from that. So this is direct process of spiritualization, whereas the karmakanda is more indirect, because the bhakti is much less, and the goal and intentions of the people is also generally material enjoyment, etc. But subtly, the Lord is guiding them to a higher goal. So in that sense, it's spiritualized. But the effect in bhakti is much more powerful.
Spiritualized.
So in that case,
the material senses
have
become spiritualized?
Yeah. For even regular devotees, when they do spiritual activity, their senses are spiritualized also. So when you're doing activities, you don't get a material result from them. When you offer something to the Lord with your hands, then you get a result of bhakti, and that destroys karma. Now, if you offer something with your hands materially, let's say you give charity to somebody in the material world, that's sattva-gun activity. That gives karma. You get a material punya from that. So it's quite different how your senses are acting, your hands are acting in relation to Krishna. So in that sense, your senses are being spiritualized.
Veda Vyasa, he wrote down all the Vedas for us, show some mercy to the fallen souls in Kali Yuga. But then, most of the 17 Puranas and the four Vedas, they're not really helpful. So how is it? He's a personality of God. How is he that he can reveal and write down all these things?
Well, why did he do all that? Because things should be preserved at least. And people in Kali Yuga don't have the memory power to memorize all these things as they did in previous ages. Previously, there was no written word at all. So the guru would just teach the disciple, and he would memorize everything orally. He would recite it, he would memorize it, keep it in his head, and it would pass down in parampara by memory. Oral tradition, no written tradition at all. But in Kali Yuga, if we just go by oral tradition, then eventually there will be no more Vedas, and no more scriptures, nothing, because no one can remember anything. So Veda Vyas was clever, and first he divided the Veda into four sections, and then he appointed his disciples to start paramparas for the different Vedas and the Puranas as well. And then, of course, they eventually wrote them down, etc., and they have palm leaf manuscripts, and then when we come to the British, and they print books, etc., like that. So in this way, at least the things are preserved, even though we cannot directly understand their true content because the paramparas are generally not intact. But at least they're preserved for, let's say, historical reference or whatever. Still, in spite of that, we should not disregard the oral tradition, and therefore we still accept guru, etc., and we take personal instruction from guru and learn from the guru directly as well. So we never just say you can just do everything from books now or everything from printed information or whatever. There's always the direct interaction as well, which is very important.
You quoted from Bhagavatam that even a dog can chant one purely and call it to be a Brahman.
Yeah.
Now,
or beyond that also, of course.
So what kind of pure chanting is it? Because it's not easy to come to pure chanting. So what is the
pure chanting? Pure chanting doesn't mean prema, obviously, because that would just be like, you have to be prema to do anything. Pure name is simply defined as practicing, as Rupa Goswami says, in sadhana, uttama bhakti. We practice with no desire for material gain when we do our bhakti. We're chanting without asking for material benefits, and we don't ask for liberation, etc. Yeah? We still have an artist, obviously, but we're not consciously endeavoring for material enjoyment by our performance of bhakti. That's called pure bhakti, for on our level, at least.
Now, you mentioned about people who are engaged in karma kanda activities, you should not criticize them. Because sometimes they can be so absorbed into it that Krishna consciousness is not sinking in, like because of the demigod worship or whatever.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is just, if you don't criticize it, then it's like they're never going to come out of it.
Well, you can criticize the people in one sense. At the same time, we have to give respect. So, for instance, in the 64 Angas of Bhakti, it says, don't criticize the Devadas. So the worship is authorized in one sense because the Devadas themselves are authorized by the Supreme Lord. They're like the government. So we can't criticize them in one sense. But if we misunderstand them, if the people who worship misunderstand, then we can give them good directions and tell them, okay, this is not proper how you're worshipping. So if you want to worship the Devata, understand that the Devata is a servant of the Lord, and that therefore you should worship the Lord and offer the remnants of prasad of the Lord to the Devata. We can tell them that, if they still want to worship the Devata. We can advise the people. Of course, Krishna Bhagavad Gita says, don't disturb the minds of the less intelligent people too much. So we have to be a little discreet in how we advise people sometimes when they're overly attached. At the same time, the other thing is, in spite of that, don't disturb the minds of intelligent people, it says that the one who has higher knowledge must give that knowledge to the people. You must give them the higher knowledge, but it's a matter of method, how you do it, that's all.
Vishnu. You said that all the names of the demigods
are the names of Vishnu.
All the names of the Vishnu and the prayers and the chanting of these demigods, they are praising the Lord as well. So there are the many people in this world, they are worshipping many demigods here. So at any point they're going to get some kind of a security, they are indirectly chanting.
Yeah, well, the problem is they got the wrong understanding, that's all. So it's just like chanting the holy name with the wrong understanding. You get some effect, but not complete effect. So again, with the demigods, something is better than nothing, I suppose, but if we have the proper understanding, then we get to bhakti.
Yeah, because when they get their material gain from this particular demigod, and they get divert from the real goal of the life.
Yeah, so that's the negative aspect there. That they simply go for material things, from material devatas, and they ignore completely Vishnu. So in other words, they're not following the proper procedure, even.
Still, something is there.
Well, because they're not following the proper procedure, then it's minimized. So in Bhagavatam, it says that you can worship the devatas and do sacrifices, etc., in karma, yoga. But if you neglect the worship of Vishnu, then you can't even get your material results. Because the whole process is arranged by the Supreme Lord, and if you offend the Supreme Lord, then the process doesn't work anymore. So don't expect to get to Svargaloka if you offend Vishnu and say, I'm not going to worship Vishnu, I'm just going to worship Indra. Then you won't get the effect. You won't even get Svargaloka. Yeah? So even Karmakanda has to have the worship of Vishnu. If you offend Vishnu, you will not get any results. It's a waste of time.
When you said that we spiritualize our, say for example, eyes and ears, is that this material eyes and ears, or is that when you develop spiritual body, that in this body or is it another body?
Well, when you get to bhava and prema, then the atma develops its spiritual eye. So even if you've got your eyes closed and you're not seeing anything, you can see the Lord in your spiritual body. And that's what happens. They go into samadhi or trance and then they're participating with Krishna and his pastimes in the spiritual world, because they, with their spiritual body, and the material body is not active at all. So then the material body is not doing anything, the senses aren't doing anything. The spiritual body is seeing Krishna and interacting with him.
In relation to that, senses, the idea of having a subtle sense, is that different from the spiritual sense?
Because because that's part of the subtle body. The subtle body is material. But that subtle body goes with you life after life after life after life, whereas this gross body gets destroyed each time. So that subtle body with the senses and your karmas and your desires goes with you life after life. And so it's best material. If you get liberation from the material world, then that is also destroyed. So we see that we have the elements. So we have the gross material elements, and we have the senses, and the sense objects, and the mind, intelligence, etc. All that's material. But we can't see that, those senses, and we can't even see the elements, for instance. We don't know what. We can't even see earth element as such. We see a special combination of that only. Yeah? So all of this is quite subtle, actually, but it's material. And if you get liberation, you have to give up all of that. The mind element, the senses, and the material elements.
In order to see through the spiritual senses, do we have to close the external senses? Like eyes, like people many times come in front of the deities, they come travel all the way.
Not necessarily, no. So this is like a blessing. This is like the holy name. We're obviously using this material ear. But through that, we're getting that spiritual sound also. Along with that, what we think is a material vibration in the air or whatever, when we hear something, we're also getting that para element, that spiritual element going through, affecting the soul. So similarly, we use our so-called material eye to see the deity, but the deity also has a spiritual form which is manifested to us, so even the material eye can tend to pick it up. But through that again, we're getting the spiritual form of the Lord. So we say double function is there, the material eye is operating, but we're also developing our spiritual eye in the process. So the more you look at the deity and appreciate the deity, then the more your spiritual eye begins to develop. So we could say this like mercy, just as when Avatar comes, then the Lord becomes visible, even the demons can see him. So somehow or other, these forms manifest in the material world and they're perceptible by our material senses, but it's a trick more or less, because behind that we got the para element, the spiritual form or the spiritual sound of the Lord is also there.
We know that Karma Kanda has a place, as the verse has clearly stated, and it's a means to an end. And as bhakti yogis, you know, we are on the path of love and devotion, of course, to the Lord, but we are practicing devotion, devotees. We have not attained, or at least we are striving to attain pure devotional service to the Lord. So, Karma Kanda in our lives also, I'm talking from a very practical day-to-day perspective, it does have a, it can have a place, isn't it? Like we have yajnas, like we have Narasimha yajnas, or we have, like we do different things, like we straddle sometimes.
Yeah, well, sacrifice is not necessarily Karma Kanda. So Vaishnavas have sacrifices also. Like Hari Bhakti Vilasa says, you can do a sacrifice after you do your worship of the deity, you can do a sacrifice. So if it's purely for Vishnu and for bhakti, then it's not Karmakanda anymore. Karmakanda refers to doing these sacrifices, worshipping devatas as well as Vishnu for material benefits, for getting a kingdom, for getting a son, for going to Svargaloka, whatever like this, you know.
The consciousness is at a very transactional
Yeah, and it's very it's very explicit in many cases that we have different sacrifices for different material benefits. So when we're doing a sacrifice for Narasimha, it's just like doing worship of Narasimha. So just another form. We worship the deity, we worship through fire. So in Treta Yuga, sacrifice was the medium, but it was for Vishnu. Therefore, it was a type of bhakti. It wasn't karmakanda.
In the process, you explained that we eventually get a spiritual body, giving and you're saying Bhava and Prema. But if we don't know what that spiritual body will look like, and how will I get the inspiration to attain something which I don't know how I will look like or what is my
Well, that's the mercy of the Supreme Lord. For instance, like in Sri Vaishnava or Madhvas, they're worshipping Vishnu and whatever. So they're not too much interested or concentrating on what type of form I'm going to get one. But they go to the spiritual world, then they develop a suitable form, a four-armed form that looks like Vishnu, etc., Sarupya, whatever. So generally, this is what happens. Yeah, by concentrating on a certain form of the Lord, then that particular form of the Lord is merciful and he gives you a suitable body by which you can worship that particular form. In the case of Krishna, then we are a little more particular because we get choice of rasas as well, not just servant, as with all other forms of the Lord, basically it's all dasya. But then you could be sakya or vatsalya or madhurya or dasya. So according to your particular aspiration in bhakti with particular rasa, then you get more particular forms. So you may get a gopi form or a cowherd boy form or an elder form or a young boy form or whatever according to your particular rasa as well. So that also is arranged by the Supreme Lord. But as you develop, generally, then you would concentrate more on that particular rasa or whatever, and you would also identify yourself. So if it's Madhurya, obviously, then you would have to be a manjari or a gopi, not a male form. And if it's Sakyarasa, then you have to be a cowherd boy form, and you would naturally develop that type of identity as a cowherd boy. And to help that process, then you have Raghunuga Bhakti, where you actually meditate on, before you get the form, you meditate on that particular form before you get it, and that speeds up the process. So if you're doing Raghunuga and Sakyarasa, then you meditate on your being a cowherd boy, following after Sri Dhamma or Sudama or something like that, and meditating on doing services in that particular body. And then when you get to Bhava, then you actually attain that form.
You just get to reveal through the spiritual muscle, really. Normally, advice don't jump, don't imagine yourself. Sorry, what state will the spiritual muscle tell, or if it doesn't happen within my current lifetime, then what will happen?
What will happen? Developing a desire for a certain.
I don't know what my spiritual form is.
Well, first you have to get your particular relationship first. Yeah. So once that develops, then naturally the other things follow.
So within this lifetime, rather than if I can't complete the process, I'm a spiritual master.
Then you leave it at that next lifetime until you get more particular, whatever like that. Of course, there are some persons who don't even have a particular attraction for a particular form. They like all forms and they just worship a little of everything. And then they get a very general type of rasa in the spiritual world in which they sometimes worship one form or another form and like this, but nothing very particular. So it's like a type of shanta rasa.
You were mentioning before that most people in Kali Yuga don't have faith in Krishna, so we distribute the holy name or prasada. But then also, like, we can see that book distribution is so much emphasized, like, especially in Prabhupada, he says, emphasize book distribution more, so much. But then, just being practical, like, some go out and chant loudly Hare Krishna, thousands of people can hear the holy name.
Yeah.
But I can only approach one person at a time to give them the book.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
How is it that then, Prabhupada?
Prabhupada emphasizes the books because the books have knowledge and it's a type of preaching. So for generally the person who takes the book, we would think he has a little bit of faith or something, otherwise he wouldn't take the book unless you trick him or something. So I think Prabhupada was assuming they do have a little bit of faith, and if they have faith, then they could read the book and they could get some information that way. You could speak to them also, and then they could read it and they can get more information and develop their faith through the reading process also. So that's like a second step in one sense.
And sometimes I'm worried that most people don't read the books.
That's unfortunate, actually, isn't it? Yeah. But at least if they see a picture in the book, see a picture of Krishna, then they get that Agata Sukriti. Or the Agata Sukriti, also even possessing the book, is a type of Agata Sukriti, also like taking prasadam or whatever, and they keep it in their house or whatever. Even that's good for them. They don't know. Well, maybe after some time, then they will develop faith by having the book in their house. And they'll take it down and start reading it one day, which happens sometimes. They just keep it in their house, and after 10 years, they look at that book, and they say, what is this? And they start reading it, and they become interested suddenly. So it does have power also, even just taking a book.
Can I just make a stupid comment? The book has a life of its own. Do you ever know what's going to happen to those books? Because they're Krishna. Krishna can be told.
And even if they don't read it, they pass it on to somebody else, and the other person reads it, or something like this. There's so many cases like that where the unpredictable things happen, and then somebody eventually gets the book and they read it or whatever.
Regarding this Radha ceremony, is it necessary? What can we do in place of Radha if we don't have a faith in Radha? Like for departed ancestors.
Oh, Shraddha rites. Death rites. Well, ultimately, of course, the death rites are there to guarantee that the person who dies doesn't get trapped in a hellish existence for too long. So the whole rite is there to get him out of a hellish existence, and to, if he's in another body, to give him a little push in the, a little bit of, favorable Sukriti. In his next body also. So in other words, avoid, minimize suffering, either in hellish body or next lifetime. If you do bhakti, or the person does bhakti, then it's not really necessary, because we see that simply accidentally chanting the holy name, as in the case of Ajamil, Yamadutas couldn't touch him even. Yeah? So by hearing the name or chanting the name, then that surpasses, Shraddha rites, etc., technically speaking. So therefore, we're not obligated to do those. However, one thing is, set an example for other people to follow the rites. If they don't have any faith in the Lord, then at least they should do something. So let them follow those Shraddha rites. So you can do those rites also to instill faith in other people. But when you do the rites, you should not worship Pitras and Devatas. You should offer everything to Vishnu. Okay, Hare Krishna.